been able to get wonderful, wonderful books that have been unavailable for long periods of time back into circulation. He knows probably more about putting together unusual catalogs than anyone we know. He's a great guy, and give him a good welcome.
Testing. I'm alive. Hey. Okay. Great. So before I get into my program, which I'm scheduled for computers, catalogs, and products, which I'm going to cover as quickly as possible, and then get into really good stuff after that, but that'll be good stuff too. The first thing is that Bill said, say a little about your lifestyle. Well, a lot of that I can't talk about, but some of it I can. So I'll get into a little of it. I guess this is what Bill wants you to know about. I work out of my house. I have a basement that's pretty big. I use a little section of it most of the time is all I need. And so I have a real long commute. I used to commute on some of my jobs as much as an hour and a quarter, and that was if there was no rain or snow, and it could go up to 2 or 3 hours. So I like this commute a lot better. I roll out of bed. Actually, some days I don't even roll out of bed. I answer the phone from my bed. So this is a real nice lifestyle. I got into that because I really like Star Trek, The Next Generation. And they play the reruns at 5 o'clock at night and at 12:30 in the morning. So I try to catch both of them. And if you work 9 to 5, you can't catch either of them. So I feel really lucky that way. By the way, I recommend you catch all the reruns as well as the new ones, because in my mind, the Star Trek show right now has the best writers in television. If you watch carefully, you want to know anything about how to supervise people and manage people, watch Jean-Luc Picard very closely. And those writers not only know how to write TV programs, they also know how to write things that are instructional without you even knowing about it. So my recommendation, that's why I stay up until 1:30 in the morning to watch that, and sometimes I'm working as I'm doing it, so I stay up a little later. So 9 o'clock is a little bit early for me, and sometimes I pick up the phone and I'm still in bed, but it's a great life. So now on to the real good stuff. The computers. Okay, I'm going to cover this. I think the computer is the greatest tool ever invented by man. Very flexible. You do just about anything you want with it by just changing the software in it. That's an amazing tool. A hammer, you can only do one thing with it. You can hammer with it. Almost every other tool is not very flexible like the computer is. But you do not want to get possessed by the computer. What Gary said about all of this other stuff is 0.1% of what you really need to know. The most important thing you need to know is how to sell that product. Sales is the most important thing, and all of the rest of the stuff doesn't even count. But nowadays, if you don't have a computer system, at least in your organization, to handle your mailing list, your order entry, and all of this other stuff, as you get going, you're going to be at a real loss. So you at least need to know something about computers, especially about how to have other people use computers. I personally use them extensively myself, and I'm a computer expert. That was because I was before I got into marketing and direct mail. I didn't decide that I needed to learn about computers and go back. So you want to learn as much as you can about it, but you don't want it to be intrusive. You want it to make sure that your main focus is on the right thing, which is selling and getting your product sold. So which one should you have? Well, you should have the one that you have right now if you've got one, and start with that, obviously. Which one should you pick? It depends. For instance, the Amiga is the choice for if you're going to do any guerrilla video stuff. The PC is really the choice for doing most of the business stuff. You can do it on a Mac. You can do it on an Amiga. And if you have to do it, you make do with it. But we're talking about just specialization. The Macintosh has really become more known for doing the graphics and typesetting and stuff like that. Now you can do the same thing with a PC. In fact, I do mine with a PC, despite the fact I have an old Macintosh, and I've used Macintoshes from the very beginning. I used a Lisa, which was a predecessor to the Macintosh, so I know all about that. And I've designed my system so that my PC now operates like a Macintosh. I've got PostScript, and which is the printer portion of it. I'm not going to get into anything technical, though, because that's all stuff you can get elsewhere. I think the main function you want to have in your organization is especially the word processing and desktop publishing thing. All I want to say is it probably pays to go with the name brands, because they usually have the most features, and they usually give you the best functionality and what you really need and are easy to use. On the word processing side, I use Word and Word for Windows. WordPerfect is actually the more popular one. I didn't like it for a long time because it was much harder to use. And even though I'm capable of using and I even taught classes on it, I think you should buy software that is easy to use.
Hey, Carl?
I'm sorry.
Let me ask you a computer question.
Sure.
We have computers, and I don't know how to turn them on, quite literally. And I would like to know what computer would be best for someone like me who wants to do absolutely nothing with it except type letters.
Except what?
Letters. Just
type letters.
Letters. Just I don't want it to do anything else.
Probably the Macintosh. When they first came out, I took a couple people who were absolute computer, forget it, I never want to touch a computer, and sat them down, and within a few minutes I was able to teach them the rudiments of how to do something, and it was pretty easy for them. They were amazed at what they could do.
Is there any kind of laptop I can carry that will interface with the Macintosh?
There's a portable Macintosh. I don't know. PowerBook?
Huh?
PowerBook. Okay, PowerBook.
Well, some of you people shut up so I can get an answer to this. Is there a lap Mac?
Yeah. PowerBook is what it's called.
Would it carry?
Definitely.
That's all I want to know.
Okay. Glad to help you, Gary.
I want to say something here about these programs. Right now, if you buy something like Word or Word for Windows or Word for Perfect, PageMaker, Ventura, or Quark Express, they're going to cost you $400 a piece. However, they have something called Competitive Upgrade. If you own any of these products, you can buy a competing product for $100. If you have a friend who owns one, buy the front cover off his book, and that will qualify you to buy a competing product. Don't copy the software, because that's illegal. That's piracy. But what we've done is that we bought a legitimate copy of Word for Windows, and now we're buying a competitive upgrade to all the other products to find out which is the best. They're only $100 is a lot of money. But as we talked about earlier, the tax laws are structured that you have to invest money, and investing money in tools is always a good idea.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea, yeah. PowerBook? It's a portable Macintosh, essentially, is what it is. He's exactly right on the competitive upgrades. I'm glad he brought it up, because that's how I got my Word for Windows. I did a competitive upgrade, and that was a little more expensive. It's $129, but still very cheap, considering the list price is $500 or $600 or $700. Pardon? Competitive upgrade, usually they tell you in the ad how to do it. Basically, they usually want to see the front page of the other manual for the software you own, or the diskette. You may have to bring the diskette into a dealer. In some cases, they just want you to say which one you have. In the case of Word for Windows, all I did was I said which word processor I currently had, sent in the paperwork, and they sent it back to me without any proof whatsoever. Some of them are very loose on that, but you do need to at least tell them which software you have right now. And the reason is because they make money on the upgrades. They still make money selling it to you at $100 or $120, and they will sell you another upgrade. Actually, I bought two upgrades to Word for Windows. So they already got me for two times $130. On the desktop publishing side, depends on if you have a PC or a Macintosh. I don't know about the Amiga. On either one, there's a version of PageMaker, which is the one that I use on a PC. I have used Ventura. It's a good program. Quark Express on the Macintosh is a very good program. One of the things with Quark Express you can do on a Macintosh is there's something with color separations, if you want to do color separations, which if the colors are very close, there's something called, I even forget what it's called, but it's something having to do with the overlapping of the colors. You have to do something special when you generate a color separation where the colors have to actually cross over, not butt up against each other. Quark Express does that. The other ones don't do that. So it's, if you're going to do color separations, that's something you consider. Okay, database and mailing list, probably one of the first uses of a computer were for mailing lists. And a database, usually you want something that's going to tie in. Q&A, as Bill brought up, is an excellent one to use. Some of the others require a little more technical skill. Invoice mailing label sample, okay. This is what I use. I don't yet have a proper order entry system, and the reason is because I probably should follow my own advice and not get enamored with my computer. But I have a product project, which is an order entry system that I've been designing on paper for such a long time, and I just hate to buy somebody else's because I know I'm going to have this developed. But what I use now is I just take a word processor, I use Word on DOS, and I come up with an invoice form. And the way it is, it says invoice up here, but I have my name and return name and address over here, and I have a 2. And what I do is I enter the customer's name and address here and the date. And then stored, you have like a catalog of different things you can call up by a code. So if somebody orders the Robert Collier letter book, I hit insert RCLB, and it types in this whole line for Robert Collier letter book, quantity 1 Robert Collier letter book, each and the amount. And I do that for each book. And then when I'm finished, there's a way to add all of those columns up, and I do that. The only reason I'm really bringing this up is that with a simple word processor, you could at the very least make up an invoice, and then what I do is I fold it in thirds, insert it into a double window envelope like this, and there's my return address, the customer's name. I never had to make up a label for the thing. I take this, I put it on the outside of the box, I put clear plastic tape, packing tape, I only use clear tape, and I put 2 strips of clear tape on it, and there's my label, so I don't have to type the name and address twice. Plus, there are a couple of people I drop ship for. They send me orders, and I ship to their customers, and I put their return name and address over here, or their name and my address, actually. So that's an easy way to do that. That's all I want to say about computers. Yes? Mail Order Wizard. Yeah, that's one of those order entries that's pretty good that I don't want to buy. Okay. Catalogs. Now, the one thing that I haven't done here is to discuss... I'm sorry. Wait for a microphone. While you're doing that, the one thing I want to discuss that isn't on here is that Bill gave me these 3 topics to talk about catalogs, and I assumed he wanted me to talk about how to do a catalog because I've done catalogs for my books and for other people. The one thing that I do want to mention is a good way to sell things through catalog is to have somebody else sell it through their catalog. And there are lists of catalog companies that maybe have everything you want, the right subject matter. For instance, here's computers, and it's all of these catalog companies that have catalogs that sell computers. If you have a computer item, you want to try to get your item into these catalogs, and they will buy in bulk many times. So I sell this, which is a report that has, I don't know, hundreds of different catalog companies, maybe over 6,000 companies. 6,000 companies. That's something to consider. Have somebody else do the catalog so that saves you the trouble. If you want to do it...
What do you sell it for?
It's $32.95.
Did you create that yourself, or did you buy the
No,
license?
That's done through AdLib, and it's updated pretty regularly. Yes?
Yeah, Carl, I don't know much about computers. I don't know anything. The only thing I do, I give the money to my sons to buy the computer. Now, they buy an Amiga 500. Amiga 500.
Yeah.
Now, how can I use that for a business? You mentioned that...
For business?
Yeah.
I really don't know a lot about how to use the
Amiga
for business.
Yeah, let's don't get into specifics about that. You're going to need a computer. Your choice primarily for business computers, IBM or Mac. It's a personal choice. Most people in business, 90%, have IBMs in their office, whether they have a Mac or not. You're going to be compatible with more people who have an IBM. If you want both, you're going to be able to afford both if you do it right. So, you know, don't worry about it now. Don't buy an Amiga 500 or an Amiga. Either get an IBM or Mac.
I already got it. That's why I was asking if I can use it.
No, let your children use it.
By the way, I have actually a lot of stuff here that I want to get through. So... most of the questions, try to hold them till either the end or corral me after this, and I'll be happy to answer them. If I say something that's that you didn't hear clearly or whatever, then by all means, just stop me on that. But I want to try to get through all this because I want to get to the real good stuff, and it's toward the end. It should be at the beginning, I know, but it's toward the end. Okay, I'm going to go through this quickly, that's why. So who should you send your catalog to? You never should use your catalog as a device for getting customers. That's not who you, what you do with it. You send it to your customers because it's a back-end deal. You want your customers to know about all the things they can buy from you. If you try to use it as a lead device, like direct mail, it's going to fall flat on its face. Plus the fact that you usually don't have very good margins. We'll get into that. So just send it to customers and people who request your catalog. Give you a press either because they heard about you through word of mouth or press releases, which are relatively free, that you can send out for your catalog. And you could place some ads for it if you do a little testing and you find out that you can at least break even on the thing from people who are requesting your catalog and what they buy. But be very careful with that. You need a lead product. When I first started with these books, I was just interested in the Robert Collier Letter book because it was so hard to get a hold of, and when I got a hold of it, it was such a good book. I said, you know, other people are going to want this, and they're not going to be able to get it. So let me republish this thing, and I did. And I find that people call me primarily for that book very often. That's because they can't get it anywhere else, right? That's the kind of product you want. You want a product that people have to come to you to get. Now, there may be two or three other people, actually, they can get it from, who buy it from me, but they're not very well known. Usually, people come to me to buy it. When they do come to me, they usually say, hey, do you have these other books that Gary Halbert or J. Abraham or Mark Nolan or all these Lawrence Tabak recommend? And I say, yeah, well, I happen to carry those. Well, when I first started, I didn't, but as people ask for it, I start to accumulate these other books and to sell them. So what products should you sell? You should sell products that are good back ends to your lead product. The lead product is going to bring people in. And what you want to do is you want to generate as many people coming to you to buy something from you as you can with your lead product. And I'll get into exactly why you really want that to happen. There's something specific you need to know about that we're going to cover later on. Product margins. The only way you can sell anything that you're only getting a 40 to 50% discount on is through a catalog. If you're selling something direct mail and you're not making at least three times your cost on the product, then it's going to be extremely difficult to make that work. And if you make it work at a smaller margin, it's because you've got a really brilliant copy, marketing scheme or offer or whatever. And you deserve to have more of that money, but if you're only getting a 40 to 50% margin and still making it work, that's amazing. And it very rarely happens. You need a much higher margin on your direct mail products than that. Yeah. Just real quick, and I'll... three times?
You've got to make three times the product.
Oh, yeah, three times. Lead product or your back end? That's for your lead product. No three times your product.
Okay, after this, no questions till he's done. Okay. No more questions till he's done, okay?
Three times minimum on your lead product. But that's not even really enough. I mean, I like to see five times is real good, is okay, and 10 times is even better. I mean, you should really aim for 5 to 10 times, and it'll be a lot easier to make it work. Okay, we're done with that, and we have another catalog. Okay, so where should you put, you're making up a catalog, where should you put these products in the catalog? Okay, and how much space should you devote to them? Well, there are three things I use. You put the most, there are three aspects of this. What products are the most useful to your customers, because those are people you're serving? Which are the largest selling and therefore the most popular? And which are the most profitable? Notice the most profitable is at the bottom. And that's because that's where they belong in that order. You should really pay more attention to what's most useful to your customer. If that's not profitable, then you can't sell it and forget it and find something else that's useful to your company, to your customers rather, that you can sell at a profit. But generally, where to put the products? You want to put the ones that are most useful or the largest selling, most profitable, toward the front of the catalog. That gets the most orders. You want to give the most space to the ones that are most useful to your customer, the largest selling, and the most profitable. And you have to balance all of these things out. There's no hard and fast formula. But you try to put them toward the front and give them the most space relative to these three characteristics. How do you produce a catalog? Well, depends on what quantity you're going to do, what format you're going to do in the catalog. If you're going to produce small quantities, when I sell these books, I don't produce large quantities of catalogs yet, and that's because there's a relatively small market for this. If you're selling face cream, if you're selling diet aids, there's a huge market for that. If you're selling direct marketing books, it's a real narrow market for that. I just get low quantities of catalogs printed up right at the moment. That may change. But one of the things that you consider is, this is the catalog, by the way. Everybody has one of these in their box. And that's my catalog, and I have some of the books over there. This is what the thing looks like now. And all I do is I go to the local Staples office supply, and they'll do it at 4 cents a sheet for me. And it's 16 pages and 64 cents. But if I go to a printer, I can get hundreds made, and it's still going to cost me the same until I get up into the thousands. Now, that's one way to do it. If you're doing small quantity, you want to get this into the hands of your customers so they know what you offer. That's one way to do it. Here's another way. If you've got a large quantity of things, Eat and Press. This is done most likely through either Dinner and Klein. Both of these you have in your boxes. Dinner and Klein is one printer that you can go to that does newsprint as well as other type catalogs, 8.5 by 11. This Eden Press catalog is 40 pages long. In quantities of 10,000, it only costs 17 cents each. That's real cheap. And if you have a product where the most important thing is what you're talking about, not the pretty graphics, which is probably most products, then this is an excellent way to go about doing it. If I were selling books to a larger community, or just wanted to print up 10,000 to send out to saturate the direct marketing community, this might be a way to go. It's real inexpensive. And Dinner and Klein does that kind of thing. Those are prices from there. The other thing is the office warehouse, which you also have in your box. Now notice that this looks like a much slicker catalog. You open it up, this is all newsprint as well. It's all black and white newsprint. It's real cheap. What's expensive is the cover. And it's not too expensive. It adds a color quality to it without costing you a bundle, because you only have to pay for the cover color in the cover and the inside. And the inside's not even color. The insides are black and white. Okay. So this is the only color you pay for. It's a good compromise between a full color, which is like the Art Deco. This is a full-color catalog. This one I did. And one of the things I want to point out with this catalog is that I was dealing with jewelry here. And one of the reasons that I got to do this catalog is because this isn't just any kind of jewelry. Every piece has a story behind it. The Art Deco period was a tremendously creative period. Sculptors were designing jewelry. Painters were designing jewelry. There were so many unique and interesting designs done by Van Cleef and Arpels and all of these famous designers. And the jewelry now, the originals, cost thousands of dollars. Some sell at auction in the millions of dollars. You can't buy these things unless you're extremely wealthy. This company has taken those designs and replicated them using the same high-quality design techniques, but using Austrian crystals in place of diamonds and rubies and other things like that, and using gold layer instead of solid gold, using a platinum coating instead of rhodium instead of real platinum. They're pretty reasonable, but there was a whole story behind each piece, and what happened is they didn't have names on each piece. So what I did was I created a name for every single piece. I researched every piece in the book and found out why that was unique. There's one piece in here which was worn by an actress in a movie, and you know, it tells a little story about it. But the technique is that someone's going to sit down with this, they're going to buy a piece of jewelry, and then when somebody says, gee, how nice that is, you know, what were they going to say before they had this catalog? Nothing. They didn't know the story. They just knew, oh, that looked nice. Now, I've communicated the story to them, and they can say, oh, yeah, this is worn by an actress in a movie, and blah, 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 and this is why it was unique, and the whole bit, and they know the Art Deco story. In there as well, one thing you might want to do with catalogs, if it's appropriate, like it was in here, was some people think it's interesting to see just how the thing was made. You know, it's craftsman. Part of this thing was it's handmade. It's not just regular costume jewelry that's knocked out. It's actually, they had to actually bring in people out of retirement because nobody knew how to put this stuff together anymore. So all of that story is in there, and it's unique. It's not my company, but I did the catalog for the company, yeah. That's a full color. These tend to be expensive. You only want to use these if it's appropriate. For jewelry, it's appropriate. It wasn't the normal jewelry catalog because there's a lot of copy in this catalog. It shows the pictures of the jewelry, but there's a lot of copy. So it's a good piece to learn from. Okay, now I'm going to products. We're moving fast here, huh? Okay. Good. Okay, products. There are two types of products. First of all, product in a general sense is whatever you produce. And there are two types. They're tangible and intangible, if you want to say, let's say service, a service and a tangible product. Example of a service is, I'm a copywriter. I write copy for people. That's a service that I render. One of the advantages of it is I don't need any inventory. It's a real low startup cost. I started in my basement. I still work in my basement. You could work in a room in your house. You don't necessarily need an office because you're going to the client. The disadvantages, which are many, are that it's labor intensive. Once you get finished with that job, you don't get any income for all the work you just did. It stops at the end of that job. And you hope you get paid, too. Skill intensive. In order for you to render a service, there needs to be a skill which people are willing to pay you for. That skill usually does not come cheaply. And if you don't have the skill, then the choice is to acquire the skill, and sometimes that's not an easy thing to do. Marketing takes productive time or needs separate marketing. When you're out selling your services, if you don't have someone else, say you're a one-man band there, you're doing work. Well, while you're doing that work, nobody else knows about you, and you have to somehow get, when you're finished the job, you have to have some other job to go to, right? The next job to do. Well, you didn't have a chance to promote yourself during that time, so what you usually have to do is when you finish the job, you go market yourself until you get the next one, and that takes time. So when somebody pays you $1,000 a day, which sounds like a lot of money, well, that's for only days that you're working. You may have to market yourself 4 or 5 days to get one day that's paying $1,000, in which case, that's not great shakes. So that's a disadvantage. Tangible products, the very best thing about tangible products is that they're clonable. Once you produce it, you can duplicate it, and they're like clones. You can continuously get income from them. In other words, it's taking yourself, something, the product of yourself, and multiplying yourself. The disadvantage is some types of tangible products require manufacturing, which requires machinery. You have to create the product. You have to develop the product. You have to inventory it. And creating it and developing it takes time. And inventory is expensive because you've got to stock it someplace. You've got to buy it and stock it someplace. All of these have relatively high degrees of problems. Now, out of tangible products, there are two types of tangible products. There's hard and what I call hard and soft. A hard product is a television, a car, a toaster, this glass, whatever. You know, something you pick up in your hand and represents the exact product. It's resource intensive, which means that if you can't get the resource to make it, then you're in trouble, and you're limited to what you can charge for it or make it for by how much it's going to cost you for the resource. If you're making something out of gold, your resource is gold, it fluctuates with the market up and down. You're limited on the low end. You can't just give away your product, for instance, and figure out my cost is low because I manufacture it. Well, a good portion of your cost is in how much you pay somebody else for the product to make that. It's got a high development cost. You've got to develop, it's a complex product to develop. High cost in development, and it's usually heavy. So that means you're going to have to pay more for shipping. On the other hand, the products that I prefer are the soft products. And those products include books and reports, include audio tapes, videotapes, and computer software. Books, generally, you can produce a book that will cost you a dollar in quantity that you can sell for $20, $30, $40, and sometimes even more. Same with reports. You can generate a report that is a few pages long that you sell for $3, $4, $5. I carry a book by Jeffrey Lant, it's called How to Make a Whole Lot More Than $1 Million, commissioning reports, books, blah, 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 and the title is out the window. But he's very good at generating these reports, and he's got some good information there. Basically, what he does is it's on computer, and when somebody orders a report for $4, I believe he charges, he has the computer spew out this dot matrix report, which includes 4 or 5 pages. It costs him about probably 5 or 6 cents for the paper, and then the postage, which is 29 cents in an envelope. So for under 50 cents, he's got a $4 product there. I like reports because Haldeman Julius, if you read Gary's newsletter, in 1987, Gary wrote one talking about Haldeman Julius selling 100 million of these little blue books, what are called little blue books, and how he sold them is every ad had nothing but the titles of the books, and you had to buy 20 of them. They were a nickel a piece, which was cheap even for then in the 20s. And part of the thing is he wrote a book called The First 100 Million, which documented how much of each title sold and how he went about doing this. The attraction is that he found out what were the hottest selling titles, which were the hottest selling categories. If you want to test market a product, why not generate a bunch of reports on all these possible things that you might want to do a product on and judge by how many reports you can sell? Because it's always better to judge what works by what is getting people to reach into their wallets and willing to pay you money for. And a low-priced item is very good to do that. So if you have, let's say, 20 reports you were selling on different categories of ideas you had for a product, you didn't know whether they worked, you would investigate it according to what Bill has laid out with the marketing. You saw different markets that were really hot, and you said, gee, this market looks hot. What can I do there? Well, a report doesn't take a lot of time to do up. And if you can't write, then just hire somebody to write. They're real cheap if you know how to go about doing it. Put an ad, classified ad, in a newspaper, and get people. You will be surprised how many people who write and want to see their name in print and are willing to work for next to nothing. You don't want to get somebody who writes for a magazine or writes books to do it. They're going to charge you too much. But there are a lot of would-be writers who, if you have them send you a sample, you will find that there are gems amongst those rocks there. And there are some really good writers who don't make a living at writing and are willing to work for next to nothing, who will do these reports for you. You just provide them the research information, tell them what you want done with the thing, tell them you want a four-page report, and here's what you're going to pay them. Audio tapes is an excellent way to turn a product from a low-selling paper and ink product into a higher-selling one. Generally, tapes can go anywhere between $50 to several hundreds, and in some cases thousands of dollars for tapes. Videotapes, I'm not going to say anything about it. If you don't subscribe to Bill's newsletter, then that's the way to find out about those. You know all of the economics of that. You probably don't know a lot about the software. Right now, there's a revolution going on in direct mail software. People are making literally millions of dollars in very short periods of time by taking a product that is real hot selling. What's that mean, 10 minutes? Oh, my God. I'm not even good stuff. So for a 25-cent diskette, you can sell it for $50. Another product. Copyright is one of the things the government has done right. We've heard a lot about what the government does wrong. Copyright is one of the gifts the government has given us. I don't know how they didn't screw this up. But they will give you, in essence, a copyright which is good for your life plus 50 years, which is like handing your children a legacy or something they can make money from as well. And it hardly costs anything. In fact, it doesn't even have to cost anything if you don't register it. There's a circular called R2, Publications on Copyright. If you call this number, it's an answering machine, leave your name, address, and they will send you a whole catalog of everything on copyright that they will give you for free. This is a copy of it, and it has things that will tell you all about copyright, which you need to know. What kinds of products? You want to do nonfiction for the most part. I think we all know that you want to do nonfiction. I'm going to give you something that I just found out about that is absolutely amazing, and I'm going to put this here and hide some of it. Public domain. You know, I kind of had some visions of I'd like to do a movie, and I read Frank Capra's book, and I was really excited about doing a movie. Well, entertainment's a big marketplace. People buying entertainment all the time, but it's real expensive to make a movie. It just so happens that according to the old copyright law, if you did not renew your copyright after 28 years, it went into the public domain, which means anybody can copy that work. It is free for everybody to copy. Well, a lot of film companies did not renew that copyright for whatever reason. The most famous is Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. It fell out of copyright, and it's now public domain, which means that all those companies that sell you It's a Wonderful Life, in essence, didn't have to pay a royalty on that movie. Well, that's not the only movie. It turns out that there are a lot of movies that people haven't renewed the copyrights on. And if you get a hold of a good copy of that movie, you can start producing that movie and selling it without paying anybody a royalty, and it's all perfectly legal. And those are public domain. But how do you know about those movies? Well, I just came across an excellent source, which I'm going to carry. They're public domain. It's called the Film Super List. There are three volumes, only two of which are now available. It's pretty expensive, but they carry all the movies in those periods, 1894 to 1939, and then 1940 to 49, 50 to 59. What that is it has all of the copyrighted films, and then this guy had somebody go through all of the renewals and mark whether it was renewed or not. So all of the ones that weren't renewed are marked as not having been renewed. And plus, there's something called a search report, which is an extensive report on a particular copyrighted piece of material that costs you $20, and they include 300 to 400 search reports in each book. Sure. So I just found out about this, and for instance, if you want to go into the movie business, which I'm not necessarily recommending, but I just thought it was fascinating and really great. I only have 10 minutes. Okay, if you want this, it'll be up here. I want to get through some really interesting things, but real fast. Anybody interested in the greatest money-making secrets of all time? Okay. Anybody? Raise your hand if you're interested. Okay, we'll do this one. All right. The greatest money-making secrets of all time is to have your own proprietary product. I can't make very much money off of those books. That's a labor of love, not a labor of getting rich. You want to do your own product that you only have to pay for the cost of printing that book or material up. You don't want to have to pay royalties on it or whatever. You want to find a want, which is a need. A want strong enough is a need, and then fill that by finding the markets and what's an indicator. Find a starving crowd. You know something? What are people starving for right now? They're starving for money. That's why money-making opportunities work real well now, because people are out of a job, and what they're starving for is if money was water, there'd be a whole bunch of people who are now in the middle of a desert that you can sell water to. Think of it in that term. Find a way to reach that starving crowd. That's very important. If you can't reach it, forget it. And test, 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 test. You can test things cheaply. You found that out over here. And don't spend a lot of money before you know if it works. Price according to value, not cost. Information products, all of these soft products that I talked about, are valuable because of the information in them, not because of how much it costs to print. Because of the information, you can charge 5-10 times the amount that it costs you to produce, and that's good enough profit margin to do really well. WIIFM is everyone's favorite radio station. It means what's in it for me. Focus your promotion on the person. And use unique selling proposition, which is really the same thing as the reason why. Give people a reason why they should buy from you rather than someone else. Why they should buy your product rather than anyone else's product. Why they should buy now rather than some other time. Give them that reason why. Probably the greatest advertising secret of all time.
I want to say something right here. I hope that you all caught while we were doing something earlier. When he says test, 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 keep in mind that it costs the same amount to test a product that costs $300 that it does to cost a product that you're selling for $10. The postage, the printing, the labor is what your costs are. It's not the price of the product. So when you test, keep that in mind. I mean, don't waste your time testing a $2 product when it costs you the same to test a $300 product.
Also, if you have a book in mind that you want to test, get another book that's already written. Buy it at 40 to 50% off. Use that to fulfill the product on the ad to test it. That way, you're only committed to fulfill as many orders as you have. And now, when you know it works, now take the same ad and plug in your book and fulfill with your book on it instead. The greatest advertising secret of all time, created by a guy by the name of John E. Kennedy, is salesmanship in print. And that's the most important thing. If you're not selling something in advertising, then you're playing around and you're not serious. But I think everybody really knows that here. I just wanted to point out that as a result of salesmanship in print, guys like Claude Hopkins in 1950 made $185,000 in a year, which is a lot of money. Albert Lasker, who is his boss, was a partner in 1904 in Lord & Thomas and made $52,000 in his partnership before he ran across John E. Kennedy, who gave him all that was in Reason Why Advertising as the basis for salesmanship in print. And he was making $3 million a year in the middle of the Depression, just to show you how that worked, how really well that worked. Proprietary product or service. There's several ways to do it. I just gave you copyright. I think that's the most important thing. The fastest way, anybody want to know the fastest way to become an advertising expert? Okay, just real quickly. The first thing you need to do is to get Gary Halbert's April 1987 newsletter. And basically what he tells you in there is he gives you a list of books, which I just have abbreviated there, most of which are over there. He gives you a whole method for doing writing copy. It involves reading the books. It involves taking ads that are good ads that worked and writing them out in your good ones, put onto tape. I like tapes because a book requires you to devote 100% of your time to read that. And if you expect to get what you need to get out of it, a guy spent 40 years of his life putting that together. You expect to get it out by reading it once, you're kidding yourself. You're not going to do it. J. Abraham read scientific advertising 30, 40, 50 times. And that you really need to do to get all of that information, but do you really have time? Probably not. But if you have scientific advertising on tape, you put it in the car, you got to drive someplace. As you're listening to it, you want to listen to it over and over and over again. If you get sick of it, you know, just drop it and go on to something else. But there are enough tapes in there to where if you listen to those, you can get to the point where you know the information nearly as well as the guy who wrote it. And since Claude Hopkins is considered to be the father of advertising and all of these other guys who really did some brilliant things that we now use that work, that's one way to do it. Get Gary's book, How to Make Maximum Money. Subscribe to his newsletter because really that's the source of the best information on becoming copy, knowing about copy and what you need to do there. Reason why advertising you already know about. I'm going to go through this real fast. The number one challenge in all of advertising is to be believed. James Webb Young, who David Ogilvy said was one of the greatest copywriters of all time, said this: every type of advertiser has the same problem, to be believed. The mail order man knows nothing so potent for this purpose as the testimonial. That's one method of being believed. One thing Gary said in one of his newsletters was, if you believed everything you read, you'd be buying damn near everything and you wouldn't have enough money or something to that effect. Very true. And believability is one of your biggest problems in selling your product through your direct mail. Testimonials, endorsements, sworn statements, use copy of bank deposits. If you're selling an income opportunity and you made $200,000, prove it to somebody that you've made that, because they're not going to believe you otherwise. You need to put it into your ad. You need to show them. Reverse the risk. Give them a guarantee. Send it COD, 30 post-dated check. Send it on account. Not everything you can do like this. You get ripped off if you send a lot of things on account, but to the proper marketplace. Know your marketplace. Some people you can send on account to and get paid, and that's another thing. Okay, I have a testimonial sheet, which I'll hand out, which just gives you some testimonials. It's a yellow sheet. You want to prove it to the reader. You want to give them a sample of something. You want to demonstrate the product to them. You want to show them a before and after. If you're selling a diet product, you want pictures of people who weighed 300 pounds and now weigh 110 pounds or something to that effect. You want to show before and after because then that proves that, hey, something really happened here. And everybody is in the show me state here. Focus on the reader. We discussed WIIFM. What's in it for me? And that's because when somebody's reading a magazine or reading a direct mail letter, they're not concerned about other people. They're concerned about what's of interest to them. They're the only ones reading it. So that's why it's not because they're especially selfish. It's that while they're reading, they have to have some system of cutting out all of the unnecessary stuff. There's too much for them to absorb everything. Sell benefits rather than features. The definition of a benefit is something that relates to the reader, not to the product. Feature is something about the product. A benefit is something about what it will do for the reader. Use you. Don't say, we do this, we do that, because that's talking about yourself. You want to say, you will get this, you will get that, this will give you this much money or whatever. Make it easy to order. Make it real. Use specifics and exact figures work much better because people believe them much better. To be believed, you need to use that. Photos work better than drawings. They're more realistic. They've been shown to to result in better better response. But I want to warn you about something. Photos are so, how many? Five. And if there's any question, you should test it. The kind of photos you need to know to do are photos that show the product either in use, being appreciated, or show the end result not getting there. Like Gary, I think Gary said, if you're selling travel, you want to show people enjoying themselves at the beach. You don't want to show people in an airplane. Okay, repetition and multimedia. Repetition is real good if you know how to use it. The more somebody sees something, the more they believe it. And in actual fact, by research, people will not buy expensive products until they've had at least five exposures. I think 80% of all the sales come on or after the fifth exposure, which could be, one exposure could be seeing a classified, picking up the phone is another exposure, receiving the direct mail package and reading it is another exposure, picking up the phone and talking to somebody again is another exposure, getting another mailing piece or whatever. These are all multiple exposures, seeing an ad in a newspaper or a magazine. Month after month, more exposures. Multimedia, if you see something in more than one media, it's real to you. If somebody sends you a direct mail letter, you say, well, I don't know, you know, anybody could send me a letter through the mail. But if you see a direct mail letter, you turn on the television, there's an ad on cable for the same thing. You open a magazine, there's another ad for the thing. You open your newspaper, there's another ad for the thing. It has a lot more effect. And it can increase your results dramatically. Okay. Skip over that. I just want to show you some basic mechanics of direct mail from classic ads. A good formula is headline at the top, actually not headline at the top, usually illustration at the top, then headline underneath. This is a variation of that, but this headline is significant. If you make these mistakes in English, the reason that works is because it doesn't say, do you make mistakes in English? That question, you can say, yeah, I do. Turn the page. Nobody's interested. You make these mistakes, well, you can't answer that question until you read the copy. So you've got to read the copy in order to answer the question. The question is raised. The copy is indicated to do it. Notice that there's a drop initial. By putting a drop initial in the upper left-hand corner, the first paragraph increases your readership by 13%. Do you think that increases your sales? Sure does. There's a coupon down at the bottom here. There are subheadings in between the paragraphs. This is one that was written a number of years ago. It was very successful.
I want to make a point. Put that back up there. You know, you might think this is not a direct mail letter, right? It's not. It's an ad or an article. Remember when Gary said yesterday he's going to send out his letter about him accepting clients in an article accompanies it? This is the format you want of your article, something like this. So while this may not look like it applies to direct mail, it applies specifically to direct mail because adding an article adds a lot of credentials to you. When I was at Gary's seminar, one of the things Gary talked about was getting your own PR. The best PR you could possibly get is somebody, if you went out and hired somebody to write an article about your product just the way you wanted to, and then you could get that put in all the newspapers and magazines. Well, that's exactly what I did. I went out and hired somebody to write an article about us. And we, for the byline, it was Jojo Gunn, which was my dog at that time. And in the last 2 years, we've seen it appear in several magazines. In the current issue of a major magazine, they have reprinted that article word for word with a photograph and the byline, just because we went out and had somebody create a nice one-page magazine article and then made it available to every editor in the country. So you do need to do that. And we include that article in the product that we sell so people say, hey, I saw that article. So remember that.
That was done by Maxwell Sackheim, ran for many, many years. This is one done by Claude Hopkins. Notice there are two women there, one with a film over her teeth. That's a demonstration. So it's like a before and after. It's kind of, well, oh, there's the difference, right? Notice the drop initial, the coupon, the offer for a free sample, okay, from what we talked about. Okay, if you see the M here, notice how the M for meat is two lines wide. It's real big, okay? that directs the person's attention to starting there, and 13% more people read that. I don't know exactly why. I guess it's because it directs their attention. If you think this only works on old ads, open up your in-flight magazines and you'll see this thing. Now you can read the best business books in 1990, and this is an old copy of it, but in just 15 minutes each. Notice the drop initial, the coupon, the subheads, the powerful headline, the illustration at the top. All of that works for it. Another classic ad that worked real well, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Notice the headline is very powerful. Notice the drop initial, the coupon, the subheads to break up the paragraph, a list of things here in the box. Here's one of the most famous John Caples ads of all time. Notice illustration at the top, headline below it, drop initial over here, and the coupon ordering form, the subheads that break up the paragraph.